If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
Before we get to today's show, have you seen the amazing containers that cannabis and hemp products come in these days? I'm talking about those amazing joint tubes you carry around in your pocket or the cool containers edible products come in now. There's a revolution in packaging happening around the cannabis industry. In fact, it's already happened. Our new sponsor, KushCo, is largely responsible for incredible innovations that are so useful, well, we take them for granted. But these packages have to comply with strict guidelines, be childproof, and all other sorts of regulations. Kush is on top of that. I guess they are really good at what they do because they've sold over 1 billion units of stuff to more than 5,000 legally operated medical and adult use dispensaries, growers, and producers across North America, South America, and Europe. Check out their site at kushco.com/podcast for more information. The show starts now.
A hard life makes a good is a short life of trouble and a long time being wrong. A hard life makes a good song. A hard life makes a good song. You know, a hard life makes a good song.
You've been listening to A Hard Life Makes a Good Song, performed by the infamous String Dusters at Telluride and taken from their live album, Live from Telluride. The 20-song album was indeed taken from an entire performance at that famed festival, and the set spans the band's 12-year and 8-album career. A Hard Life Makes a Good Song was a track off their 2017 Grammy Award-winning record, Laws of Gravity. Though the album was released back in November, the boys have been on the road, you know, doing what they do, so up until recently, we haven't had a chance to catch up with anyone to talk about the live release or their winter tour plans. Finally, we tracked down Dobro magician Andy Hall to talk about the live release and all other things they have going on. Of course, our conversation was a fairly organic one, but started when I thanked Andy for taking the time, given the band's hectic schedule.
There's always plenty going on, but that's good. It's fun. It's what we love to do. And so, tour starts right soon here, so we're stoked.
Have you guys been off since Strings and Soul? Have you been able to get any downtime in the last month with Christmas and New Year? Well, you played a show New Year's Eve, but have you been able to get any off time over the last little bit?
Yeah, oh, definitely. You know, it's Christmas was great. We had some time off for that. We did do a 4-night sort of New Year's run in Colorado, which was really fun. And you know, now there's a new festival. It's Winter Wondergrass in Vermont, which is now the weekend after Strings and Soul. It used to be Strings and Soul was kind of our last thing till New Year's, and we'd have a few weeks. And now there's another festival that, you know, we'll probably frequent. So that time is getting crunched a little bit. But, yeah, we had some time. Everyone got to go home and, you know, visit with their families and enjoy a little bit of downtime for sure. I mean, everyone's, you know. And then if there's other time off, people usually just tend to fill it with stuff.
Right.
That's just how we do it. We can't help ourselves.
Are you guys always in communication, even when you're off, thinking about, I'm sure management checks in with each of you, but together, are you thinking about songs, thinking about covers you may want to add, thinking about different toys you may want to bring up on stage in terms of effects? Is that an ongoing process, even though, you know, there is some downtime? Are you always thinking about what's next for the Dusters?
Yeah, and it's very informal in that way. You know, somebody will just shoot out a text, and I got to say, I always love it when I get a text with just the band on it. You know, a lot of times there'll be text threads with crew about certain details or with management, but when it's just the band on a text thread, there's something really cool. I just love that. It's like, that's us. That's like the home team, you know. And yeah, people will say, hey, check the, you know, somebody will send a link to a song. Check this song out. Maybe we can do this. Or, yeah, some thoughts about the set list or whatever. So, you know, we do that. It's like I say, it's very informal. It's just like when somebody has a thought or an inspiration, they'll pop out a text and, you know, we'll people will chime in. But I like that because it's, as I say, it's not like let's have an official band meeting about this. It's more just like, hey, I have an idea. Check it out.
You guys released the infamous String Dusters Live from Telluride back in November. And it's 20 tracks. It spans the history of your career, of the band's career, with some great covers, Tennessee Jed being one of them. And I will get to that in a second. But I'm curious what made you decide to release now your second live album in a matter of years, instead of perhaps jumping back in the studio since the Grammy Award for Laws of Gravity.
Sure. Well, we have done that too. We have a record done currently. And so, you know, it's just a matter of getting all the ducks in a row to have a proper release. So we have done that. You know, that stuff takes a little bit of time, and we get antsy to release things. So one fun, easy way to just put something new out that the people haven't heard is take a live show that we felt really good about or we thought was interesting or important in some way. And our sound engineer, Drew, will, you know, mix it. Actually, I think in conjunction with Andy Falco, our guitar player, mixed it, this one, actually. But yeah, so we'll take it, you know, we'll mix it, make it sound awesome, and release it as, you know, something that we thought was just a fun, unique, important show. Telluride has a, you know, a special place for us. It's sort of, you know, the origin spot of sort of Colorado bluegrass and something we've been going to since, you know, we were just a wee band. So we released that in this November. We thought it was a really cool show, fun jams. You know, that was one of those ones where you come off stage and like, wow, that was pretty cool. But yeah, we do have a studio release, going to be coming out here in the next few months. So
looking forward to it.
Hasn't been announced yet.
No.
Yeah.
And you know, tease us a little bit if you can. Are they songs on the record that you've played already live? Are these songs that you're keeping in the vault, sort of, so that once you release the record, it's all fresh and new for the fans? What's that process like for a band of your ilk who, you know, has to fill out set lists on a fairly consistent basis?
That's so true, and that's kind of always the challenge, is to keep the show fresh. But now, you know, the last couple records we've really enjoyed and thought it was cool to wait to play the new songs until the record comes out, you know.
Right.
There's just something really neat about that. It's like unveiling this whole new chunk of Duster material all at once. It's really fun. And you know, and as we've grown, I think it helps for the fans to, at least some of them have heard some of this stuff. When you play a brand new original song live that nobody's ever heard, sometimes it can be a little hard for people to connect to it. They don't have any context. It's just like, oh, okay, you know, here's a new song, you know, and if it's awesome, eventually, you know, they'll get into it. But,
right.
But yeah, so we've been waiting, and that's what we're doing now. We're going to wait until, you know, till the song's released. We'll probably release a couple singles leading up and begin playing those as they come out. But there's something really fun, I feel like, about saving that material and then trying to fill out the set list with other things. Like, there was a couple of songs that we had to record for this record. You know, we didn't record everything that we brought to the table, so some of the ones that maybe didn't make the cut for the record, we've thrown into the set. So we've got some, you know, new original stuff, because you don't want to just do covers all the time to keep a set list fresh. You want original stuff, but sometimes you don't want to wait all the way until that next record comes out. So it's a balance. We try and throw new original stuff in the set list. We try and, you know, keep the covers fresh. I mean, we have a lot of songs at this point.
Yeah. I was going to say 11 years in or 12 years in. You best have a lot of music recorded.
Yeah, you know, we've got seven studio albums, multiple cover albums, live albums. You know, we've got bluegrass repertoire. So there's a lot to play. It is so fun, and we get anxious when we've got all these new songs and we're just waiting for the record to come out and we want to share it with everyone.
I'm curious about the selection of songs from Telluride. Did you know going in that that was a performance you were going to record? Because probably like most of your sets, although this one was a little bit longer, it really does create sort of a greatest hits situation for you guys in terms of the music that you've put out. And it's a nice compendium for people who are trying to get a handle on the Dusters in terms of your music and in terms of the different voices in the band and all of that. Were you conscious of that when you put the set together for Telluride?
No, that was just a set that, you know, Chris Pandolfi, you know, our banjo player, he does the set list. And then we have a meeting before the show where we get together and we say, you know, we all chime in and say, oh, well, you know, maybe we can do, you know, make any changes we think we might want to or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he comes up with a set list and there's a ton to consider. And honestly, everything he has to consider for the set list, you know, helps to make sort of a good, hopefully, overview of the String Dusters every night. You know, some right. end up being a little more powerful than others or whatever, just because that's the way it goes. But, you know, he takes all those things into consideration every night, getting everyone, you know, there's a number of singers, having the energy flow, some of our popular songs, some more obscure things, covers, you know, so he's taken all that into account every night. Some nights it just really coalesces into something that works wonderfully. So we didn't know going in we were going to like release it. It was one of those things where we look back and we said, yeah, it's got all those elements. The performances were really cool. And, you know, it was a special place. So there's just, you know, when everything kind of comes together that way, we thought that's the one that we'll release.
Now, you're a band that allows, I believe you allow taping at your shows. And if not, certainly Nugs.net makes all of your shows or most of your shows available online for purchase. I'm curious about... Well, obviously, given that, you know, the history of the band at Telluride, but was there any question that you were going to release an album or put this together separate from what you're doing on Nugs? And how does that all come together?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, we do. So our sound engineer records every show in kind of a basic way. It's just a, you know, it's like a right. board feed with a couple of mics. So it sounds really good. It sounds amazing. It's not like it's a mixed album right. where, you know, we're able to sort of, really craft it, in the way, you know, that we would want sonically. I mean, like I say, the Nugs things sound amazing, but it's not a mixed record. And so the difference to me is like, one thing is, yeah, we go in and we mixed the album, and actually the Telluride album ended up sounding pretty acoustic, which I think is cool.
Yes.
The way it was mixed, it actually sounds a little more acoustic-y than a lot of the Nugs recordings, which is kind of neat. And then also it's just sort of, for us, it's like the statement and the story of, we thought this particular thing was important to us. So we're going to showcase it. We're going to feature it in a way, you know, by releasing it as an album. And I think that's kind of a big part of it. What's the story that like the band wants to tell? What was important to us? You know, mm-hmm. Bands all have their favorites, but this is an opportunity for us to say, hey, this is our favorite. We're going to take extra time, curate it, make it sound just the way we want and give it to you guys. But yeah, we do. We like people to hear our music. You know, Nugs is a great venue for that. People, you know, go to see shows and they get excited about it. They talk about it online. People download it. So, I think it's nice to have those things available.
We actually have featured some of your music. We do a weekly feature that we just started called Live 5, and we featured one of your performances from the Ogden. From the Ogden in our Live 5 feature last week. So we're very familiar with your music on Nugs, and we love it. Nice. We can't get enough of it. Speaking of that run and speaking more generally about set lists, I'm curious about your choices around covers. You know, this Telluride record features a couple of covers. We mentioned Tennessee Jed. There are other Grateful Dead covers that you guys do. You work a few Fish covers into the set. Right now I'm staring mm-hmm. at a set list that has sort of a Grateful Dead cover mashup with Fish, you know, Dancing in the Street, Bathtub
like
Gin.
Like sacrilege, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
People get so mad about that.
You were blowing people's minds, probably.
They hate it. But we love it, you know.
Yeah.
Because you have Fish fans and you have Dead fans, and sometimes they don't always see eye to eye on what they like to hear.
Right.
For us, we love it. Those are two big influences on us. So,
of course,
you know, it's not a stretch for us to infuse those sounds into the show. You know, picking covers is interesting. You know, it's we you want to be known for your original music. That's what mm-hmm. we really try to feature. But, you know, there are just some songs that, you know, end up working at the show, you know, that are covers. And, you know, the hope is that really the things that make it into the show for cover songs are ones that it seems like we've been able to kind of make our own, you know, that right. have their own life with us. It's not just us playing this other song that people are familiar with. It's like for some reason, when we started playing this song, it really just suited what we do as a band, you know? And there's songs that we've been doing for a long time that have become staple songs for us. Like In God's Country is a U2 cover we've been doing for years.
Right.
And it's like, it's certainly a U2 song, but I almost look at it in the same category as one of our originals, because it's just, we do it very much our own way. It's something that we've done, you know, for a long time. And that's sort of the idea with covers, is hopefully to not just play a song like the original person did it, but it has some unique meaning for you and your band, and you've been able to make it your own.
Actually, I'm just looking at something right now online, and artists covered by the infamous String Dusters, and you probably know all this already, but The Grateful Dead is number one, and I want to talk about the influence of The Grateful Dead. Dylan, obviously, is number two. The Allman Brothers Band is three. U2 is Hello. Number four. And so that makes a ton of sense, what you're saying. Let's talk first about The Grateful Dead influence, because I do remember talking to Andy about Andy Falco, I remember talking to you as well, but I remember talking to Andy about the influence of The Grateful Dead specifically on him, and I'm curious if the band has that same influence on all of you, or is that something that one of you kind of brought to the table and insists on making part of the sound and the cover situation for you guys?
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah, for me personally, it was also, I grew up, you know, listening to The Dead. I was, you know, Falco and I are a little older, so we were actually able to see Jerry Garcia play,
right.
you know. So he and I probably have, you know, a lot of that in us. It's not so true for everybody in the band necessarily,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's enough of us that, you know, that the Grateful Dead were such an integral part of our musical upbringing that it's yeah, there's no way it wasn't gonna find its way into our music in some shape. But yeah, I mean, you know, the improvising, you know, the jamming
right.
element of it initially is what really intrigued us. I mean, they were the innovators of, you know, extended improvisational jams in a sort of rock setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we've, you know, followed in the footsteps of bands like, you know, Leftover Salmon and String Cheese and Yonder Mountain in sort of co-opting some of those techniques. You know, we've tried to really take that as far as we can, not just sort of noodle and jam, but really use it as a skill. You know, and the Grateful Dead, yeah, they kind of invented that. And but not only that, you know, the songwriting is
yes.
incredible. I mean, it's not, the jams are one thing that keep people coming back, but it's more the songs that keep people coming back to the Grateful Dead. They're underrated sometimes, I feel like, as songwriters, because the songs are just incredible. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a big influence. You know, it's no secret that Jerry Garcia started out as a bluegrass musician, as a banjo player, and had all those influences, and with Grisman and Olden in the Way. And, you know, I think for, you know, we have two sort of schools in the band. One came from like the Grateful Dead, maybe got an Olden in the Way record and then found its way to bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few others maybe came from bluegrass, like Jeremy. And then, you know, eventually maybe heard about Olden in the Way and found their way to the Grateful Dead. So,
right.
you know, Jerry and his bluegrass were kind of the X point, whichever direction you were coming from,
mm-hmm.
bluegrass or rock. He and like Olden in the Way and stuff were sort of that crossing point that would bring people both directions.
Our conversation will continue in just a bit. Off the top of the show, though, I told you about Cushco Holdings. They are, by the way, a publicly traded company under the ticker KSHB and the parent to innovative cannabis industry leaders such as Kush Supply Company, Kush Energy, The Hybrid Creative, and Coletto Packaging Solutions. They are doing amazing things aside from sponsoring our show. You should check out their website at kushco.com/podcast for more information. Now, back to the show. I want to talk about the cover of Tennessee Jed for a second. And it speaks actually to a lot of the covers that you guys do in terms of, like you said, making them your own, being true to the lyrics, being true to the song for the most part, but again, making it your own in terms of tempo, certainly in terms of instrumentation, and the jam is very different. Is that something that you guys spend hours doing? Is it something that you kind of just, I don't want to say wing because you're all professional musicians and you don't really wing anything at this point. But how does a cover like Tennessee Jed come together in terms of what we hear when you guys are on stage?
Sure. So it's interesting because a few years ago, say 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, we not only started hanging out and playing music with Phil Lesh, we started hanging out and playing music with Keller Williams. And Keller Williams has, you know, a project he does called Grateful Grass. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Tennessee Jed is one that came pretty much directly out of that Grateful Grass repertoire that we were doing with Keller Williams for a while where, you know, so he kind of had a bit of an impact on us in that regard. You know, we would, when you play with Keller, you're definitely winging it. That's how he rolls. And he's kind of like an orchestrator and a conductor, and he'll conduct things in real time. And so with some of these Dead songs, we would do with Keller, we would kind of take the general vibe, like say the tempo. He likes to play things fast, you know?
Yes.
And then we would take it and be like, that, you know, that was really cool. Let's take that sort of high energy vibe that we do with Keller, and let's fine tune it for us and sort of refine it and get the arrangement tight. So yeah, I mean, some of that was, you know, Keller's influence. Some of it just is the way that bluegrass instruments tend to sound good is by playing fast.
Yeah. So,
you know, and without drums, sometimes those really laid back grooves that the Grateful Dead would do don't quite translate, you know, the same, you know, when you're, right, when you're playing in a bluegrass band and you're just laying way back and playing sparse, it doesn't have any motor to it. You know, like the drums underneath with the Grateful Dead, they can play really slow, but there's always this constant kind of motor rhythm going. And without drums, you don't have that. So tempo is one way you can sort of infuse some energy into a song without drums, you know. So that's sort of the thinking there.
So I'm going to ask about a different cover because we want to make the Fish fans as agitated or as excited as the Grateful Dead fans. But Possum is a Fish song that, in my mind, was probably originally intended to be a bluegrass song because of the influence of bluegrass, specifically on Mike Gordon, but certainly all of them have some bluegrass influence. But Possum is a song that you guys cover, but you take it to the extreme in terms of bluegrass instrumentation and jam. Whereas Fish, you know, kind of, again, laid back a little bit. That must be a fun tune to play, too, knowing its origin and knowing kind of that it fits your sound so well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the idea. Possum's one of those ones we've been doing for about a year. And I, like you say, like when I was remembering the song when we first started playing it, I'm like, oh, this is like an up-tempo bluegrass song. And then when I listen to Fish's version, it's pretty laid back.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, it's not one of Fish's like heady jams. I mean, people love the song just because it's got a fun little chorus, but
yeah,
it's not one of those ones where people are like, oh, this is like the one I've been waiting for necessarily. but for us, it just, it lends itself so well. I mean, even the sort of the idea that it's about a possum,
right?
You know, is kind of like got a good bluegrass cliche in there somehow,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And then, yeah, like the way it just swells and it has this really hooky lick and, yeah, it just really worked for us. You can't always plan how these things are going to go and whether they're going to work or not, but that's one that just slipped right in and we made our own arrangement of it. And yeah, once again, the kind of the tempo is something where, you know, we bump up the tempo. It provides that energy that you don't get when you don't have drums and the song's been working.
And there's those crazy jams. I mean, in the middle of the song, there's just you guys. It's unbelievable. It really is. It's a great treat to listen to. I know you probably don't want to say too much about the new record, but Laws of Gravity was to a certain degree thematic, and I don't want to say it was a concept album necessarily, but it did sort of flow in that way. Is that something that we can expect on the new record, or is it going to be something much different than Laws of Gravity?
No, I feel like it's almost I don't want to call it a Laws of Gravity 2, but it's definitely like in that same evolutionary line and sort of the next step. And it's even more of I feel like has a homogenous theme.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot more with blending songs together. Like we do live at the show on the recording, you've got times where multiple songs will flow into one another without a break.
Right.
Which we've never really done on a record, you know. Laws of Gravity has, you know, it has some pretty uplifting vibe. This to me is even more in that direction. It's a very kind of, you know, spiritual record in a lot of ways.
Cool.
Certainly not a religious record, but definitely a spiritual record. And yeah, we really wanted to incorporate some of the things that we do live, not just in terms of like a jam, but in terms of like musical segues. You know, that's been something that we've worked hard on over the last few years, is segueing songs together. And we were able to sort of do that on this record quite a bit, more so than any other record. So, yeah, there's a lot of songs that flow into one another. There's certainly some themes that pop out, and I just think it's going to be something that people are going to be stoked to listen to as they're driving down the road or cleaning their house or whatever.
Well, we can't wait to hear it, and we'll definitely invite you back when the record does come out. Let's talk about this tour. I don't think there's a state in the United States of America that you haven't played, and it looks like you're mostly hanging out in the Central/West this go-round. Is it easier to stay out west in the winter than it is necessarily to come east? How does the routing go, and how involved are you guys versus management versus, you know, your agent and stuff in terms of routing?
Sure.
And deciding where you're going to go?
I mean, the band is fully engaged in that conversation at all times. Travis, our bass player, is kind of like, he's the guy that really is helping plan all the tours with our agent and management. They have calls all the time about it. And he, you know, so we've got a lot of really smart people working on it. You know, we discuss what we want to do, but, yeah, as far as like where you start and what time of year you go where, it just depends on how things are working out, but yeah, we're doing the West Coast here coming up, which is awesome. You know, it's going to be nice to go to Southern California in January and get some warm weather. And yeah, we make our way pretty much across the whole country. We just announced more of the East Coast dates, so that's happening more like in March and April.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, this is probably going to be, it's going to be our biggest tour that we've done, at least in recent years, as far as like number of shows and stuff. We're going to be pretty much rocking you know, from now through April and then even into May, and then festivals start. So, yeah, I mean, the routing, you know, it's like you want to hit as many zones as you can. You know, there's certain areas that we don't hit enough that we'd like to more. I mean, this run, we're kind of doing one of our first forays into Florida. We've never really done a lot in Florida, so we're psyched to go down there. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I will say going to the West Coast in January is fine by me. So
yeah. And then, you know, all the popular spots where you guys, you know, have made a name for yourself, whether it's, you know, Colorado and playing the state or up north in Oregon. I mean, you guys really do have markets where I would assume these shows, if they're not sold out already, sell out pretty quickly, because those are great markets for bluegrass and for the Dusters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I will say the mountain zones always tend to favor us, whether it be Colorado or Montana. You know, like, we've got a Montana show on the books. It'll probably be sold out pretty quick. You know, in Virginia, you know, places that just, you know, the mountain zones really seem to love us. And, you know, but it's always interesting to see how, what the crowds are into and what places are really going well, what places we want to keep coming back to. And it seems like it's evolving, you know.
Right.
It's funny to have been a band for as long as we have and still see things grow and change and see new markets emerge where you wouldn't expect, but we're doing really well. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It's always enlightening and kind of a surprise to see how it all goes, you know. But it's, you know, the nice thing is for us, after 13 years, it's still growing, you know, and that's what you hope for.
And you have some pretty cool openers this tour, too. Midnight North is opening for you on a bunch of dates, and the Shook Twins and John Craigie.
Yeah.
So some nice guests, and I'm sure there will be some guest spots in each other's sets, no doubt.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, those are all friends, you know. John Craigie, I'm a fan of. We haven't actually hung out with him a bunch, but I do like his music a lot. You know, Midnight North and Shook Twins, we've known for a good while, and they're friends, and they're definitely will be collaborating and hanging, and that's one of the great things about when you're playing shows with another band, is that you get to sort of, you know, make friends, influence each other, check each other out. That's huge, is just that cross-pollination, you know.
Plus a female voice to join you, right? I mean, Elliot is just absolutely incredible. And so,
yeah, having, she is so awesome. Totally.
Having her potentially to join you for some stuff will be great, too. You've also announced, of course, that in late May, speaking of Phil Lesh and the Terrapin Family Band, you'll be playing Red Rocks. You're a band that's played Red Rocks before. How excited are you to get back there to that venue?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. We if we can, you know, we want to play Red Rocks every year in some way if we can. It's just definitely something that's like always a highlight on the calendar. I think this will be our fifth year doing something at Red Rocks.
Wow.
So that is pretty awesome. It's so cool that has become like a regular stop for us. I live about 3 miles from Red Rocks, so for me it's pretty fun too. With, you know, my place is the after party, you know. But it's and to be able to do it with like Phil Lesh and the Terrapin Band, and there's something pretty special about that, you know.
Right.
And you know, my hope is that there'll be some collaborating and some jamming, and take full advantage of the bands and the space and everything. So yeah, we're very stoked about that.
You mentioned evolving, and we'll leave here because you have spent a lot of time with us, but you mentioned evolving in terms of going places you've never been. And I think that's an exponent of the fan base growing nationwide, not just for the music that the Dusters make, but for the music that other bands like Leftover Salmon or String Cheese or Yonder, or, you know, the list can go on and on and on at this point. I like to say that for me at least, you know, 2018 was the coming out party for Newgrass, at least in terms of my listening habits. But I'm sure it's like that for a lot of people who are really intrigued by the music and the tradition that you are to a certain degree keeping hold of. But you guys, more than some of the others, have really stayed true in terms of instrumentation and in terms of songwriting and in terms of playing to the tradition in many ways. And I'm curious if that is something that you think holds you back from exploring other sonic venues, or is it just something that, you know, you're comfortable with and that's your pocket and you're okay with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think it's hard to avoid given the amount of time we all individually spent playing like more traditional bluegrass, you know, that was sort of like the language we learned, as well as rock, you know, but bluegrass, you know, those are the instruments we play. We play banjo and fiddle and dobro. So having that more traditional bluegrass as sort of a language and a foundation, is really cool. It makes it easy to communicate among band members. You know, there is sort of a language there that you can speak that we all know. And so, yeah, I mean, those tools that you learn from bluegrass are just so effective as far as like the harmony singing, the musicianship. Those are all things that we really value. And the hope, the idea is to take those things, that are so high quality about bluegrass, the in-tune singing, the great musicianship. We want to take all that, the energy, and use that as a vehicle for our own unique, creative, original music, you know? And so, I think sometimes, yeah, I mean, sometimes maybe it can hold us back a little bit, but I think less and less so. I think, like you say, more people's ears are being accustomed to the sounds of banjo and of bluegrass and of fiddle and of that style of singing. And that's made clear by how well a lot of bands are doing right now, from Green Sky to Billy Strings to us, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like the more people whose ears get accustomed to that sound, the more people are just going to be excited about those sounds and be into the bluegrass vibe, you know. I think it is a little bit of an acquired taste, but I feel like people are getting exposed to more of it now than they ever have. So I love that. I love, you know, the more people's ears who we can tune into that sound, the more people are going to get excited about it. It's just such an awesome type of music that I feel like the sky's the limit for. So I think at first it seems like it may be a little bit of a limitation, but all you got, you know, all these bands are out there converting people to that sound all the time.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And I know I do, and I know the fans of the show do. They're always asking for us to get, you know, Green Sky on the show and you guys on the show and all of your brothers and sisters who make this kind of music. So thank you for doing it. Thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it. Good luck for 2019.
Hey.
We're excited for all of the music and a new record, hopefully later in the year, and continued success. Every time we speak to you guys, it's always a privilege and it's always inspiring. And so thank you. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thank you. Thanks a lot.
And there you have it. Andy Hall and the Infamous String Dusters will continue to be very busy in 2019. Sounds like we may even get a new record from them before the year is out. That would be pretty amazing. You'll definitely want to check out Live from Telluride to tide you over until new music makes its way to our ears. Of course, you can also catch the Dusters on the road, and you can check thestringdusters.com for all the relevant details and a whole lot more. Before we leave you, have a listen to the Grateful Dead classic, Tennessee Jed, a tune that is just a wee bit different as a bluegrass number.
Tell you what, we love you guys. what we do.
Yeah, goal line tackles a ball and chain. Listen to the whistle of the evening train. You know you're back to wind up dead if you don't head back to Tennessee dead. Rich man, step on my forehead. Well, when you get back, you better butter my bread.
You carry me back to Thank you so much, Telluride, from the bottom of our hearts. The best weekend of the year, all because of you. We love you guys. Thank you so much. We'll see you again soon. Until then, we're the infamous String Dusters. Have a great rest of your weekend, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.